One man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter.
The Alliance to Restore the Republic, known alternatively as the Alliance to Restore Freedom to the Galaxy, the Rebel Alliance, or simply the Rebellion, was a loose coalition of insurrectionist factions operating at planetary, system, and sector levels. They shared a common purpose, opposing the Galactic Empire. Their primary goal was to reinstate the former Galactic Republic by ousting Emperor Palpatine and dismantling his new order across the galaxy. Imperial forces, including stormtroopers and other loyalists, disparagingly labeled members of the rebellion as rebels, rebs, or rebel scum. Compared to other guerrilla movements and insurgencies, the rebellion represented desperate interests, but also did develop a strong unified command and central objective, contributing to their overall success against the Empire, as well as a smooth transition of power with minimal infighting post-war.
Those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety.
You are listening to the Star Lores Podcast.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Are you stuck up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder?
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
Dark times.
Before the dark times. Before the Empire.
The origins of the rebellion date back to before the actual fall of the Republic. A group of concerned senators began to meet, seeing the increasing authority that Chancellor Palpatine was accumulating under the pretext of the Clone Wars. Padme Amidala of Naboo, Bail Organa of Alderaan, and Mon Mothma of Chandrila grew increasingly apprehensive about the constitutional amendments Chancellor Palpatine continued to make. These changes weakened the legislature while endowing the executive branch with nearly dictatorial authority. Despite the majority of the Senate supporting such amendments due to the challenges posed by the Separatist crisis and subsequent Clone Wars, which threatened to fracture the galaxy between the Republic and the Separatist insurrection. The rebellion against the Galactic Empire originated as a peaceful movement led by a political minority called the Delegation of 2000 within the Galactic Senate. This group believed that the constitutional amendments were excessively radical, unconstitutional, and posed a threat to the Republic's future. Despite the imminent defeat of the Separatists in 19 BBY, the final year of the Clone Wars, most senators continued to grant even more power to Supreme Chancellor Palpatine, concerned that the Republic was heading towards authoritarian rule. The Delegation of 2000 formally appealed to the Chancellor to relinquish his emergency powers. Amongst the aforementioned senators, Representatives Binks, Garm Bell, Iblis, and Fang Czar. When Palpatine finally revealed his hand and overthrew the Republic, many of these senators would be singled out, arrested, or even executed. Many of the senators went into hiding, worked towards founding the rebellion, or even continued to serve the mechanism of governance through the Imperial Senate, working to undermine the regime.
Death of democracy.
So this is how liberty dies. thunderous applause.
During 3 years of intense galactic conflict, Chancellor Palpatine's public image grew stronger. Throughout the Clone Wars, he enjoyed widespread support from the Republic citizens, and the majority of the Senate remained firmly behind his decision-making. However, the systematic erosion of long-standing Republic traditions and democratic values deeply troubled Amidala Organa and the group of like-minded senators. They feared that the Republic was sacrificing its core principles in exchange for perceived security. The implementation of the Sector Governance Decree, which effectively sidelined the Senate in favor of hand-picked military governors known as MOFs, only exacerbated their concerns. In response, the delegation of 2000 launched a petition signed by 2,000 senators opposing the increased authority of the MOFs and urging Chancellor Palpatine to restore the Republic to its pre-war state. However, their efforts were thwarted when Palpatine issued Order 66, leading to the betrayal and execution of the Jedi officers by the Republic clone soldiers. Subsequently, Palpatine convened a special session of Congress and fabricated a narrative of the Jedi rebellion to justify his transformation of the Republic into the Galactic Empire. Amidala and Organa, both influential members of the delegation, watched in disbelief as their colleagues applauded the demise of democracy. The Emperor swiftly moved to eliminate the delegation, charging its members with sedition and treason. Many signatories of the petition were imprisoned, executed, or forced into exile. Following the Empire's devastating conquest of Kashyyyk, the Wookiee homeworld, more members withdrew their support out of fear for their lives. However, Organa and Mothma managed to evade persecution for a time. Before her death, Amidala urged her allies to resist the Emperor's tyranny in secret while outwardly complying with his regime's directives.
Imperial Senate on a diplomatic mission to Alderaan.
You are part of the Rebel Alliance and a traitor. Take her away!
Holding her is dangerous. Word of this gets out, it could generate sympathy for the rebellion in the Senate.
I have traced the rebel spies to her. Now she is my only link to finding their secret base.
She'll die before she'll tell you anything.
Leave that to me. Send a distress signal, and then inform the Senate that all aboard were killed.
Lord Vader, the battle station plans are not aboard this ship.
Growing oppression, violent resistance.
Please, the Senator from Chandrila stands with those in opposition to the Emperor's new public safety legislation. Is there a more important issue facing this body right now than Imperial overreach? The Public Order Resentencing Directive is the next step on an all-too-predictable march toward complete, unchallenged authority. Our first responsibility is to the citizens who have sent us here. Our second vow is to protect the power and independence of this remarkable chamber. I stand here today to speak with senators who've come with open minds. Those of you who still believe that when we enter this building, we are in a temple.
Emperor Palpatine employed a draconian strategy to enforce the new order, utilizing oppressive measures such as instilling fear through military might to deter any notions of rebellion. Despite not receiving unanimous support from all member worlds, the Galactic Empire encountered early resistance, notably from Naboo, the Emperor's homeworld, led by Queen Apalena. Under her leadership, Naboo continued to venerate the memory of the Republic, refusing to acknowledge the Empire's dominion over the galaxy. Apalena's consideration of harboring Jedi fugitives was construed as rebellion by Imperial intelligence, prompting the Empire to deploy armed forces to quell dissent. The 501st Legion, commanded by Darth Vader, stormed Naboo's capital, city of Theed, in 18 BBY, resulting in the fall of the city, the destruction of its garrison, and Apalena's assassination. Subsequently, the Empire employed forceful tactics to suppress disloyal governments, often relying on Vader's 501st Legion to impose the Emperor's will, where resistance persisted. In the same year, civilians protested the Empire's despotic policies on Gorman, culminating in the tragic Gorman Massacre, when Governor Moff Wilhuff Tarkin's arrival resulted in the deaths of hundreds of activists when he landed his ship on them. Outraged sympathizers, including Jand O'Downa and Bail Organa, distanced themselves from Imperial service, recognizing the Empire's malevolent nature. Despite discontent and covert meetings among political allies such as Organa, Mon Mothma, and Garm Bell Iblis, organized rebellion seemed premature. Mothma's outspoken criticism of the new order led to her exile, while Iblis went underground to evade persecution. Other incidents of armed resistance against Imperial rule involved remnants of the separatist movement, such as Gizor Delso's attempt to revive the cause on Mustafar. The 501st Legion thwarted Delso's efforts, and similar rebellions on Kamino led to the destruction of rogue clones and their creators. Localized independent resistance groups, notably on Corellia, Alderaan, Mon Cala, Chandrila, as well as formal and informal groups such as the Atrevis Resistance Groups, Duros Resistance, Kotas Militia, and Jedi Purge Survivors, and many others would later come to form an alliance.
A symbol of hope.
It is settled then. My wealth will fund the rebellion while Garm provides our fleet and Mon Mothma our soldiers. And with you leading us, we have the power of the Force on our side. Therefore, let this be an official declaration of rebellion. Today, we all vow to change the galaxy. And one day, the galaxy will indeed be free.
Years preceding the establishment of the Rebel Alliance, Darth Vader encountered Galen Merrick, a Force-sensitive human child, during an assault on Kashyyyk. Merrick's parents, Kento and Millie Merrick, were Jedi Order members, endowing him with potent Force abilities. Recognizing Merrick's potential, Vader took him as a secret Sith apprentice, training him rigorously and bestowing upon him the moniker Starkiller. As Starkiller's training progressed, his past identity faded into obscurity under Vader's tutelage. The Sith apprentice was groomed to ultimately aid Vader in overthrowing Emperor Palpatine. In 2 BBY, Vader tasked Starkiller with assembling a rebellion against the Galactic Empire, aiming to create chaos and provide an opportunity to eliminate the Emperor. Starkiller successfully recruited key figures such as Jedi Master Ram Koda, Bail Organa, Mon Mothma, Garm Bell Iblis, and Princess Leia Organa, who pledged their support to the burgeoning rebellion. The foundations of the Alliance and its terms were documented in the Corellian Treaty, an agreement forged among the leaders of the anti-imperial resistance factions, and it marked the establishment of the Alliance to restore the Republic. This treaty formally initiated hostilities against the Empire. Despite initial reluctance, Starkiller orchestrated a symbolic act of defiance by destroying an Imperial shipyard and crashing a Star Destroyer. However, Starkiller's mission was a ruse, orchestrated by Vader to gather the Empire's enemies for capture. Vader's betrayal was revealed to Starkiller, who ultimately renounced his Sith identity and confronted Vader and the Emperor aboard the Death Star. In a valiant effort, Starkiller sacrificed himself to allow the Rebel leaders to escape, marking the beginning of the Rebel Alliance. Following Merrick's demise, the leaders convened on Kashyyyk, where they officially founded the Alliance to Restore the Republic. In honor of Merrick's legacy, they adopted the Merrick family crest as the emblem of the rebellion, symbolizing hope during the ensuing Galactic Civil War. The symbol would come to be known as the Alliance Starbird, or the Phoenix, as it represented the hope for a new republic being born from the ashes of the Empire. The symbol, either by fate or coincidence, was also once used by the ancient Old Republic during the time of the Great Galactic War, and was most often depicted in red or blue, but was also used in yellow, black, or gray. The starboard emblem found use across multiple governments, such as the Alliance to Restore the Republic, the Alliance of Free Planets, and the New Republic. Variants of the symbol were also adopted by entities like the Galactic Federation of Free Alliances, the Alliance in Exile, and centuries after Merrick's passing, the Galactic Alliance Remnant, and the Galactic Federation Triumvirate. Moreover, the starboard bore resemblance to the emblem of the Old Jedi Order, albeit with modifications, and later served as a symbol of the New Jedi Order and the Temporary Jedi Coalition.
Are we ready to finish what he started? Then at last, the Rebel Alliance is born. Here. Tonight.
We need a flag to rally behind. A symbol. A symbol of hope.
Bolstering support.
This is Senator Mon Mothma. I've been called a traitor for speaking out against a corrupt galactic senate. A senate manipulated by the sinister tactics of the Emperor.
For too long, I've watched the heavy hand of the Empire strangle our liberties, stifling our freedoms in the name of ensuring our safety. No longer, despite Imperial threats, despite the Emperor himself, I have no fear as I take new action. For I am not alone. Beginning today, we stand together as allies. I hereby resign from the Senate to fight for you, not from the distant halls of politics, but from the front lines. We will not rest until we bring an end to the Empire, until we restore our Republic. Are you with me?
Now formally created as an opposing coalition against the Empire, the Rebellion set to work acquiring soldiers and war materials, at first fighting only with what they had, including outdated equipment and starfighters. The Rebellion soon made technological progress by securing key allies. Significant contributions to the Rebel Alliance's arsenal included the defection of personnel from Incom Corporation, along with crucial materials integral to the development of the advanced T-65 X-Wing Starfighter, acquired notably at the Battle of Freccia. This acquisition provided Rebel pilots with a distinct advantage over more numerous yet unshielded TIE fighters employed by the Empire. Additionally, following his liberation from the Imperial enslavement by Rebel forces, Gile Akbar facilitated an alliance between the Rebels and the Mon Calamari, renowned for their shipbuilding expertise. The Mon Calamari's provision of capital ships, particularly the formidable Mon Calamari Star Cruisers, significantly bolstered the Alliance's naval capabilities. Integral to the Alliance's strategy was a doctrine of space denial, involving hit-and-run raids on Imperial shipping to disrupt supply lines and operations, as well as procure essential resources equipped with hyperdrive-capable fighters and pre-arranged escape routes. Rebel forces could execute these operations efficiently, evading Imperial retaliation. Simultaneously, the Rebel Alliance absorbed the majority of remaining Separatist holdouts, acquiring assets such as the Recusant-class light destroyers. Some notable Imperials would also come to defect and join the Rebellion, bringing with them training and experience that they could use and pass on to Rebel recruits. Additionally, worlds and species who found themselves under the yoke of Imperial rule offered large pools for recruitment to provide soldiers to the cause, some even having been trained as former pro-Republic insurgents and veterans from the Clone Wars. Despite the growing resistance movement, the Empire still maintained the upper hand in numbers and raw military power. cowing potential rebel collaborators through intimidation and fear. It was this doctrine that would lead to the unveiling of the final weapon meant to end the insurgency once and for all. A superweapon that could be used against entire planets so that the Empire could maintain complete control in the face of total annihilation. The Death Star.
Regional governors now have direct control over their territories. Fear will keep the local systems in line. Fear of this battle station.
And what of the rebellion? If the rebels have obtained a complete technical readout of this station, it is possible, however unlikely, that they might find a weakness and exploit it. The plan.
A New Hope. While the rebellion maintained guerrilla warfare tactics and strategic hit-and-run military operations, overall, it was still a fledgling movement, and unable to go toe-to-toe with the Empire. Keeping their main base on a hidden, long-forgotten moon on Yavin, the Rebellion had to rely on secrecy and sabotage. Issued prior to the Battle of Yavin, the Declaration of Rebellion was disseminated widely by the nascent Alliance, circulating millions of copies across various systems. It delineated the Alliance's guiding principles and articulated grievances against Palpatine's regime, concluding with an unequivocal pledge to topple his rule. The declaration, authored by Mon Mothma and endorsed by Resistance representatives, convened at the Corellian System meetings, served as a direct response to the Galactic Empire's characterization of rebel combatants as terrorists, pirates, and thieves, which prompted Emperor Palpatine's dissolution of the Imperial Senate. Despite Mon Mothma's cautionary advice, several systems openly declared defiance against the Empire after being moved by the declaration's contents. However, they faced severe repercussions for their political boldness, as the Empire swiftly and decisively quelled their resistance efforts with overwhelming force. When the Death Star was unveiled to the galaxy in the devastating attack on the planet Alderaan, an icy grip of fear took hold of the galaxy, chilling but not extinguishing the outrage of the annihilation of an entire planet. Despite the sacrifice of billions, the Rebellion was able to harness the atrocity as fuel for recruitment for those who would not be cowed. But the Rebellion still had to act quickly to destroy this weapon, before it would destroy more worlds, and ultimately undo the Rebellion. At the Battle of Yavin, the fate of the galaxy would be decided. The Empire managed to track down the home base of the Rebellion to Yavin 4, and it prepared the Death Star to rid the galaxy of them once and for all. The Rebels, against all odds, had managed to acquire the Death Star plans and locate a weakness to exploit. Rallying all the fighters they could muster, the Rebellion attacked it in a final desperate gambit. History would remember the Battle of Yavin, and history itself would come to be defined by the battle, becoming year zero of the standard galactic calendar, and forever splitting history between before the Battle of Yavin, BBY, or after the Battle of Yavin, ABY. Despite all odds, and after the deaths of many Rebel pilots, a single X-Wing starfighter, piloted by the young Luke Skywalker, was able to fire a pair of torpedoes that entered the Death Star's exhaust port, obliterating the superweapon and killing Grand Moff Wilhoff Tarkin, along with many more Imperials. Civil War.
He is dead.
Then he is now more powerful than ever. He was meant to root out the rebels. His sacrifice will only inspire them.
But now we know who they are. I will hunt them down and destroy them. As you always intended, Master.
You must be relentless, Lord Vader. If even a single rebel survives, this alliance that we have unwittingly created will be our undoing.
The Battle of Yavin was a major turning point for the Rebellion, and showed the galaxy that the Empire, despite its monolithic and indomitable appearance, could be beaten. Thousands of worlds rallied to overturn their oppressors, and the Rebellion had grown its ranks and public standing as a legitimate opposition to the Empire. In the year 2 ABY, the Rebellion's insurrection became a full-fledged galactic civil war. This sudden opposition would not go unchallenged, however, and the Empire tightened its grip across many more worlds in an attempt to regain control of the spiraling situation. It mustered its forces and began occupying and fortifying more and more planets, even those it had not previously seen the need to send troops due to assumed loyalty. Despite the victory at Yavin and the escalation of the conflict, the Rebellion was still unable to match the Empire in a stand-up fight and had to be judicious with the battles it chose to fight. Further, with the base at Yavin 4 compromised, the Rebels had to relocate to another secret location, eventually settling on the remote and icy world of Hoth. Despite the Rebellion's victories, it also suffered defeats, and, lacking the resources of the Empire, each loss was felt much more keenly. Additionally, the Alliance to Restore the Republic leadership had begun to fray with major leaders such as Garm Bell, Iblis, and his troops separating from the Rebellion and starting their own insurrection after a major fallout with Mon Mothma. These losses were offset by the addition of new factions such as the Bothan Resistance Fighters and the creation of a true Rebel Navy, led by Admiral Akbar and the Mon Calamari. War spread across the galaxy as planets and governments chose sides or split, leading to localized revolts. In the end, the Rebellion would finally achieve its mission at the Battle of Endor, after destroying a second Death Star and killing Emperor Palpatine. Despite their victory and forming a galactic government, the war did not officially end until 19 years after the Battle of Yavin 4, as the Empire still had loyalists, holdouts, and remnants that refused to concede even after Endor. Despite all this, the Rebel Alliance, technically becoming the Alliance of Free Planets, shortly before it would come to form the New Republic and assert its sovereignty.
Structure and composition.
You rebel scum.
The Alliance was comprised of two main branches, the civil government and the military, overseen by the Chief of State and the Commander-in-Chief, respectively. Throughout the Galactic Civil War, both positions were consolidated under Mon Mothma's leadership. The civil government undertook typical responsibilities akin to planetary civil administrations, including safeguarding Alliance citizens, revenue collection, service maintenance, and managing foreign relations and defense, with member worlds or governments assuming many of these duties.
Civil government. The Chief of State held the highest position within the Alliance, akin to an elected autocrat, wielding extensive authority over the Alliance's affairs. Biennial elections, though mandated by the Corellian Treaty, were largely ceremonial due to Mon Mothma's unanimous support. As per treaty provisions, the Chief of State's tenure would terminate upon the Emperor's removal, demise, or resignation, prompting the Advisory Council to assume executive control and convene a constitutional convention for the establishment of a new Galactic Republic. The Advisory Council comprised representatives from 7 allied governments that had made significant sacrifices in the struggle against the Empire, serving as the Chief of State's primary advisory body. The Council approved or rejected proposals and held authority to dismiss a Chief of State with a two-thirds majority vote, thus serving as a check on executive powers. Throughout most of the Alliance's history, worlds such as Alderaan, Dak, and Sullust held membership in the Advisory Council, owing their unwavering dedication and substantial wartime losses. The Alliance Cabinet served as the chief of state's administrative body, comprising ministers chosen by Mon Mothma for their commitment, intellect, and efficacy. The cabinet encompassed six ministries: finance, education, state, industry, supply, and war, overseeing alliance funds, civil intelligence, propaganda distribution, external relations, industrial production, supply chain management, and military advisory functions, respectively. Additionally, the Ministry of War guided the Chief of State in directing Alliance military forces and oversaw the Alliance High Command.
Military. The Alliance military assumed the formidable task of combating the Galactic Empire and dismantling the tyrannical regime of the Emperor, a mission embraced by all rebel military personnel. Comprising Republic loyalists, former separatists, and defectors from the Imperial ranks, the Alliance military operated under the leadership of the Commander-in-Chief and the Minister of War, with the Chief of Staff acting as an intermediary between them and seven supreme allied commanders of Alliance High Command. Alliance High Command exhibited a heterogeneous structure reflecting the rebel military's reliance on various components, including the centralized Alliance fleet, Alliance Starfighter Corps, local military units, and covert resistance cells. Fleet Command, under the stewardship of Admiral Akbar from Zero ABY, commanded the Alliance fleet, while Starfighter Command oversaw the Alliance Starfighter Corps, whose tactical control often deviated from the nominal subordination to Fleet Command. Special Forces Command, directed by highly skilled Alliance Special Forces, serving as a backbone of the rebellion, and deployed for a range of missions, including support roles for fleet or sector forces, base security, and combat operations. Ordnance and supply, along with support services, managed military procurement, transportation, and logistics, while Alliance Intelligence fell under the purview of the Chief of Intelligence. Sector Command exercised authority over the Alliance's numerous sector forces, which constituted the ground forces of the Alliance Army. Sector forces enjoyed considerable autonomy in conducting operations within their respective sectors, albeit subject to oversight from Sector Command and, at times, directives from High Command. Sector forces occasionally contributed ships and troops to the Central Alliance fleet for pivotal engagements as requested by Sector Command or High Command.
Allied Commands. The Allied Commands of the Alliance constituted the local governing bodies of planets, sectors, organizations, and groups affiliated with the Alliance. Each Allied Command exhibited slight variations in structure based on the organizational framework of individual member worlds. However, in practice, Allied Commands mirrored the hierarchical structures of the Alliance government. These commands encompass a diverse range from individual member worlds, such as Mon Calamari or Alderaan, to entire sectors like Atrevis or Chernus. Many worlds had their own interests in mind when joining the Alliance, and could range in motives from complete friendship and dedication to mere shared hatred of a common enemy in the Empire. Some of these disparate groups may even have exhibited extremist ideologies of their own, some of which the Alliance would rather distance itself from.
Welcome aboard the Millennial Falcon. This is Christian.
And this is Jordan.
And before we just jump into today's discussion, just wanted to remind everyone, feel free to reach out to us and talk to us about the content of our episodes, suggestions, feedback, anything like that. You can always reach us at our social medias on Facebook, X or Twitter, and Instagram. And you can send us an email at starlorespodcast@gmail.com. Always interested to hear from you guys about our topics and just the things we talk about, and if there's anything we missed or your thoughts as well. Also, if you have any kind of fan fiction or fan art or collections you want to feature, we can certainly accommodate that and just post interesting collections of Star Wars related content that you might have.
Also Discord. Don't forget about that. There's always a good lively discussion on Discord. If you want to support the show, you can. Number one way you could do it is Patreon. We have our Patreon page. There you can get access to all the bonus episodes. patreon.com/StarLores, just a one word, StarLores, no caps or anything. And you can find it there. And we put all our bonus content up there on the Patreon. You can also, there's a couple other ways you can support. I've started, also you can, if you don't want to do monthly, you can actually buy single episodes on Patreon as well. So if you could, you know, think of it as a tip or something. If you wanted to go and buy a single episode, you can go pay for a single episode. Also, if you're a Spotify user, you can subscribe to the premium episodes as well. You won't get any of the other bonus content. You just get the bonus episodes. And if that's all you want, that's totally cool. We'd love you to subscribe as well, and you can get access to those. So those are the ways that you can support the show. Yeah, I think that's about it.
Always leave a like.
Yeah. Also, rate and review the show. That helps us
reach a wider audience.
And share it with people or in groups that you're part of that might be interested in this content.
I always appreciate a shout out.
Indeed. So where are we today, Christian?
We're orbiting the beautiful world of Chandrila, Mon Mothma's home. Birth, I guess, not really birthplace of the rebellion, but one of the many birthplaces of the Rebel Alliance. Yeah, this topic can get a little sketchy. I guess first off, the Rebel Alliance has a really good PR team. certainly, there's a lot of shades of...
They made three feature films about their triumph over the Galactic Empire.
I think sometimes we joke around and get too far in the other direction. We're like pro-Empire. The Rebel Alliance were fighting for a noble cause, which isn't something that could be said about all dissident groups. I do think the fight for liberty isn't solely controlled by one side. And I do think that the Rebel Alliance does a decent enough job, at least in Legends, to show kind of like... It's a bunch of different groups, and their real aim, their fundamental goal is to restore the Republic, to restore them to a system that had already existed. People tend to think about kind of resistance movements, typically out of the left-wing camp, as like revolutionary forces trying to overthrow an existing regime. But there's also lots of groups that are fighting for restoration. You have the Whites in Russia who fought against the Soviets or the Red Army. And they were a band of different goals. Some wanted to reinstate a monarchy. Others wanted to create a republic, all working towards a common goal of defeating the other side.
You also had like the Romanians who resisted the Soviet Union after World War II. And they were like brutally put down, but they were like Romanian nationalists, you know.
Yeah.
And if anyone wants to read about what happened in Romania from the side... I mean, you'll be sick when you read about it, but not exclusively like revolutionary left-wing groups.
Yeah, which is where people tend to go with, and certainly George Lucas's intention was there.
Yeah,
more or less, even by his own admission. And then two other just shout out to revolutionary groups: the French Resistance, which was made up of everything from far left ideologues and revolutionaries, anarchists, but also even like Christian fundamentalists and Republicans and people who just were all generally anti-fascist.
Right.
Which isn't the exclusive domain of one side.
Yeah.
So, and of course, a lot of our American listeners would know the founding of their very country being based on a revolutionary movement.
Yeah. Yeah. The American Revolution, I mean, I guess maybe it was kind of rooted in some of those Rousseau ideas, but it did seem more maybe not so much of like a left-wing movement as...
Oh, no, not by any means. They wanted to institute a republic against their current monarchical system, right? Like, and I'm not an expert on the Revolutionary War by any...
And like taxation without representation.
Yeah, and that.
Yeah.
But that was all part of being under the system of not a foreign king, but their former king.
Right.
Who was exerting unfair control over them, right? And the United Kingdom had revolutionary wars as well.
And here in Canada, we still haven't had we still haven't thrown the shackles of our of our monarch.
I'm not going to go there.
Come on, Canadians.
In any case, so I just wanted to reference that revolution isn't solely the domain of one political faction, and it does have a cross-section of different undergirding political ideologies, depending on who the dominant force is and who the people who are opposing it might be.
Yeah.
One thing that Legends always kind of lacked, I do realize that especially early Star Wars is a lot of black and white. And as I've grown more mature in my appreciation of fiction, I do like shades of gray. And I do think it's an interesting area to explore that even the Disney canon, credit to them, have done, is explore maybe not a good side to the Empire, but at the very least a dark side to the Rebellion,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is really an area that's worth investigating. So one of the characters in question, Saw Gerrera, he's one of those characters from started in the Clone Wars, but really takes off in the post-Disney canon. He runs a group of like radicals, absolute radicals, who do engage in terrorism and tactics that are frowned on by the rest of the Rebel Alliance. So again, you have this like group that are really trying to keep their image clean. They are trying to restore democracy to the people from an oppressive regime.
But they sort of are like by any means necessary.
Yeah, this other group is by any means necessary. Right, exactly. And even the Rebel Alliance is trying to like distance themselves from that mentality because it ultimately gets a lot of innocent people killed unnecessarily. And then also I think there's a lot to be said for like even ideological movements that are even like religiously or fundamentalist based would be interesting to explore in Star Wars. And there are some alien races that do exhibit that, again, mostly in the Disney canon.
Yeah.
It'd be cool to see some maybe like pro-Jedi radicals. Like,
right, yeah.
Jediism is kind of hard to go in that direction because if you truly support the Jedi, like, it'd be counter.
It does seem like the Sith tend to be more willing to use political violence
to achieve it. Objective. Maybe the Jedi doesn't necessarily work unless they were like jaded by what they had seen happen to them. And you could use that as a, oh, well, now we actually have to fight back. Otherwise, we would have been exterminated.
Yeah.
Like our pacifism, well, not really pacifism, but our non-aggression is what got us into this place.
Right.
I'm just trying to create like a narrative argument as to why you could have like Jedi extremists.
You could maybe do like a, because I know there have been like Jedi sects that are like more, they're gray Jedi, right? You could maybe do some sort of angle with that, I think.
Yeah, there's so many different ways you could take it. Is all I'm saying. And Disney has actually done a good job of creating a rebel alliance that is all these different forces coming together.
Yeah.
Whereas, they kind of give textual homage to that in the Legends. But, like, if they're all trying to just restore the Republic, they're all really just Republicans, smaller Republicans. Or, you know, trying to restore the democracy rather than really having really different and divergent views. Again, caveat, you do see actually a split between Iblis, who does break off. He doesn't like the direction that Mon Mothma is going in. There's always that tension of fear of, like, are we becoming what we're fighting? Especially with Mon Mothma occupying both positions of head of state and military leader, which are intentionally separated on purpose, because even though they're fighting a noble cause, they're worried that, hey, maybe we're actually investing too much power in a single individual.
Yeah.
Shout out to the Hunger Games for for anyone. And spoilers, like, you have that revolutionary vanguard who do take over and become the bad guys themselves, right?
Yeah.
In the form of President Quain, for anyone that's familiar with that mythos.
Yeah.
So just, there's some areas where they could have delved. I think I would have enjoyed if they delved a little bit deeper, potentially, for the Rebellion. The other thing I kind of wanted to talk about is the founding of the Rebellion. I don't know how I feel about this, to be honest. So when they introduced the Force Unleashed video games, they took the idea of like how the Rebellion was founded and actually made it a ploy by the Empire, by Darth Sidious and Darth Vader, getting Galen Merrick to centralize all the potential. So back up a little bit. Early on, when the Empire took over the galaxy, you have all these different like individual planets and leaders fighting against the Empire alone, right? And obviously that's not, it's an uphill battle because they have no external support. They're alone and isolated fighting against a superior foe. But for the Empire, it's inconvenient to have to like put out all these little fires all over the place, and it's, you know, getting unmanageable.
Yeah.
So instead, Sidious orders Vader to use his secret apprentice to gather all these rebel leaders together and create one single alliance
that the Empire would just instantly come in and smash.
Yeah.
So they were like centralizing their enemies on purpose, which as a tactic is actually not a bad idea. You do find a lot of like guerrilla campaigns. The whole reason they're successful is it's really hard to pin down their leadership. You kill one guy, two more guys pop up.
Yeah.
A lot of like our history in Iraq and Afghanistan, right? Like it's just
in the 20th century. So it's kind of interesting, and this will be a slight rabbit trail, but I think it'll connect to what we're talking about. I'm reading this book called The Shield of Achilles by this guy named Philip Bobbitt, and he's actually like some sort of American constitutional expert lawyer professor. It's a long book. I'm kind of slowly trudging my way through it, but it is actually pretty interesting. And he has this whole thesis that like basically the beginning of World War One to the fall of the Soviet Union was all really one war.
One extended conflict.
Yeah, and they're all like just interconnected, and they're all just, you go World War One, World War Two, the Korean Wars, the Vietnamese War, I believe the Spanish Civil War, and then like the Cold War stuff. Yeah, that happened, and then like the fall of the Soviet Union, roughly 1990-91, depending on what dates you use. That was sort of the end. He calls it the Long War, and he actually goes through like quite extensively. He goes through like the 30 Years War, and kind of like compares and contrasts like the similarities and how the 30 Years War wasn't just one battle or one conflict. It was it was these rotating conflicts that were kind of feeding off of one another. And
you don't really see it until you kind of see it in hindsight.
That's right. Yeah. And that's sort of like a lot of his thesis. But one big thing with his thesis is he says that like new military technology changes the face of war. After each like epochal war happens, right? And so like after the end of the Long War, as he says, like and he wrote this book and like he actually published it just before 9/11, and then he did an updated edition right after 9/11 because of the events of 9/11. And he even before I guess the republish, he talks quite a bit about like terrorism and how like we're going beyond like this nation state idea of like where there's a nation state that has like a centralized military. And, you know, he goes into like many of the terrorist groups and stuff and even different network. It's not even one terrorist group. It's like a network of terrorist networks. And they have like a sort of common military objective or political objective. Right. So anyways, it's just like it's kind of interesting even contrasting in like how like people behave after sort of like an event that sort of changes the course of history, you know, like the Long War or something, and how it sort of like where there's all these like disparate groups that aren't necessarily natural allies, but they become allies through
a common enemy.
Yeah, through a common enemy and stuff like that. So I don't know. I just thought there's kind of I may have lost my train of thought a little bit there, but
you promised it would connect.
Yeah, I know. what was your last point there?
I don't even remember now. Okay, I'm invested now in your rabbit trail.
Yeah. I'm gonna remember that soon.
Okay.
But anyways.
Well, while we're
hold that thought.
While we're waiting for that. Kind of going back to just the other factions that could have been incorporated that, again, Disney, I think, did, again, I don't know how this episode is turning into praising Disney, but they did do a good job of incorporating elements from the Clone Wars into the Rebellion.
Yeah.
And elements of Imperial defectors who also, and Separatists.
Yeah.
So, like, you have these, again, like, former Republic clone trained resistance groups who were fighting against the CIS, becoming allies with the CIS against the Empire. You have CIS holdouts, you know, planets who were fighting for their independence against the Republic.
Yeah.
Who are now trying to be dominated by another empire. So to them, it's still the same struggle. They're still not free.
Yeah.
So they would have continued their fights.
And also, like a lot of the separatist groups. like all the this new like rebel alliance, that was all the people that were subjugating them before, or they viewed as subjugating them.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's like, is this actually like a step up for me? Like,
yeah, or is this more of the same?
Yeah, exactly.
And then you also have like even ex Grand Army of the Republic soldiers, even former clones who would have been on either side of this joining. You know, you have independent clone seekers like commandos and things that might have joined the rebels, but also many that were automatically drafted as a transition into the Empire.
Yeah.
And then you even have what was the other group I mentioned? The Imperial defectors.
Yeah.
So you have one prominent Imperial defector, Han Solo, right? Like people who, the Empire is just the default state of government, something that just was here, or people are just generally just don't care about politics. And like, okay, they're the government now. Realize how terrible things are and decide, hey, I don't want to be part of this anymore, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of different groups that are covered under the umbrella of the Rebel Alliance, but the backbone of the Rebel Alliance is those that want to restore the Republic, which they ultimately do. And another key point is a lot of revolutionary movements do end up fighting each other towards the end of their cause if they win. You see that a lot, even with successful revolutions.
Yeah.
Then it becomes a power play of those that are left standing. And that's something that the Rebel Alliance did a really good job to mitigate. It still happens to a small degree, but nowhere near the level that it could be, where you have a power vacuum and suddenly the Empire is toppled and you have all these different players that are going to try and push their own agenda or objective. Everyone kind of knew what the stakes were. Everyone kind of knew what the ultimate objective was, and they did pretty seamlessly overall successfully transfer from a military revolution to a standing existing government over a pretty short period of time.
Yeah, so. There's also like a lot of species that are kind of, you know, maybe ambivalent or stuck in the middle at the after the Battle of Endor, and like the Empire is like, you know, they're not ultimately defeated, but they're forced to retreat significantly, and they take a huge haircut on their empire. But like you look at like species like the Nogri and stuff, who if you read some of the books, like there's almost this like battle to try and get between the rebels and the Imperials to try. For the Imperials to keep the Nogri on their side, and then the rebels to try and woo the Nogri into their...
Each side is trying to justify their cause.
Yeah.
Right? And it happens not just to them, but multiple species who are end up... But yeah, in this middle ground of like, okay, who do we side with?
Yeah.
And there's some that have been like, who benefited greatly under the Empire, and they would rather stay with the Empire.
Yeah.
So it takes the New Republic a lot more to try and convince them to switch, right? And I like that, again, like plays into the shades of gray instead of like the rebels are just automatically good guys, the Empire just automatically bad guys. It paints like a real political quagmire that you can navigate, right?
Yeah.
Kind of going back to one point, the founding of the rebellion as depicted in The Force Unleashed and the Emperor bringing all his enemies together, which kind of led to your rabbit trail. I don't know if it's come back to you yet.
Yeah.
So... I don't know how I feel. I think it's a really cool plot point that the rebellion was actually made by the Empire and it backfired.
Yeah.
Where have we seen that before?
Yeah.
It was a pretty unique twist in the Force Unleashed games. However, it goes so as far as like Galen Merrick, the main character, Starkiller. His family crest is the rebel insignia, which did exist before. Like, this is kind of retconning him into Star Wars.
Okay, yeah.
And serving as, like, the foundation. I get a little dodgy around that. We'll do a Force Unleashed review at some point, because I have some thoughts. Some good thoughts and some not-so-good thoughts about that series. And this is one of the points where I kind of left. I don't know how I feel about how they sort of retconned how the Rebel Alliance came to be.
Yeah.
I think it downplays characters like Mon Mothma and Bail Organa.
Yeah, and it's like Star Wars does this a lot, where they retroactively make like really big, important plot
yeah.
plot elements or characters that are like, they make it so that basically the whole story hinges on this person's action.
Yeah.
But they do it retroactively, right?
Yeah.
They come in after you have all this story. And yeah, it's a little clunky, I think.
Yeah. And it's uncomfortable because if you liked the original origin story, it's like, well, why mess with that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And again, like, I don't even say I dislike it. I think it's an interesting plot change. It just, I don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah, I do wonder if Star Wars, like, I feel like I think about a property like the Marvel Cinematic Universe and how it's, like, sucking right now. But also, like, it's like suffering from like having to constantly up the stakes. And I think that happened with a lot of, like, I've mentioned this before on the podcast, like the constant upping of the stakes to basically be the destruction of the whole galaxy. Right. Like, and you just have to, it's sort of an infinite regress into that. And it's like, rather than just going off on like interesting little stories that aren't part of the
galaxy changing.
Yeah.
And one movie that I actually liked from Disney is Rogue One, which did end up actually playing the opposite. It did actually play into the role of like being the group that get the Death Star plans to Leia.
Yeah.
But it is more of this, like, no one knows who these guys are.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, they're nobodies. They're not Jedi. They're not special. And I really did enjoy Rogue One for that reason. Right.
Yeah.
They did
sure.
a great thing, but ultimately they all die and they're no one knows who they are and no one will know who they are.
Yeah, I mean, it's easily the best Disney movie.
By far.
Yeah, by far.
And it leads right into Andor. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is one of their best series.
Yeah,
too,
yeah, so. Exactly. So.
And again, it goes back to that cool political intrigue side of Star Wars.
Yes, and I feel like even in like we've been reading for our Patreons, so if you're not a Patreon, get on Patreon so you can listen to our review of Heir to the Empire. And soon enough here, I'm going to do a review, at least at the time of recording this, I'm going to do a review of Dark Force Rising, which is a sequel. But there's tons of political intrigue, and it's super interesting. And I think there, and obviously the prequels, there's like way more political intrigue than the originals.
I think it's political intrigue is one of those things that it's more about execution.
Yeah.
You can actually make tax reform interesting. It's just about how you execute it. If it's just a bunch of people talking.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Game of Thrones is good about making politics interesting.
Right. Yeah.
So certainly it can be done well.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
And just one last note. Maybe try not to get into a situation where you have to form a rebellion by not falling into the authoritarian trap to begin with.
Yeah.
By trading away all your liberties for security might be.
Yeah,
a lesson learned from the Republic and from real life. Hopefully not in the near future.
Yeah, I mean, it does always seem like that's almost the way of history. It's like we kind of lean into more liberty, and then we go into leaning into, as a society, like lean into more security. But yeah, there's always a huge cost, and like Star Wars or real life, it's you can want everything in the world and want the state, you know, to provide all that and to do all that for you. But at some point, at some point, it's going to cost you big time, right?
It's a trade-off, right?
Yeah.
You're trading security or for liberty for security.
Yeah.
And that can often be used as a weapon in times of crisis or times of fear where...
And I would say, like, the problem, too, is, like, you can guarantee liberty, but you can't guarantee security, right?
Yeah.
Like, and that's just like a government can guarantee that you have liberty if they want to, but they can't guarantee you're going to be safe.
Yeah.
You know?
Not the police, not the military.
Yeah.
As hard as they try.
Yeah. As hard as we all try, it's just like a fact of life, right?
Yeah.
Like, so.
Lessons learned from Ben Franklin, the original revolutionary.
Indeed.
Any final thoughts?
No, I think cool episode. All right. Yeah. All right. See ya.